Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Cynthia Hyatt, professional psychotherapist and relationship expert. In private practice for over 20 years, Cynthia specializes in teaching individuals, groups, and organizations about how to be successful in relationships, how to handle the variety of differences each gender brings, and ultimately, how to be your own best version. With a dynamic and enthusiastic approach, Cynthia helps each person understand how temperament and gender affects every relationship and inspires her audiences to become all God created them to be. With this understanding, she shares practical tools, resources, and wisdom to guide each person to a transformational understanding of themselves and others. You can find Cynthia on the web at CynthiaHyatt.com and on social media under Cynthia Hyatt, Inc. for current events, updates, and inspiration during your week. And now, here's Cynthia.
Well, welcome to Conversations with Cynthia. I'm Cynthia Hyatt, and I'm always glad when you're joining me. And I'm quite inspired about this particular message today, and I think you are going to get a lot out of it. I was recently given the pleasure, as well as the honor, of officiating my niece's wedding in Austin, Texas. So that is always fun when I get to operate in that role as a minister and marry family members or friends of mine. So it was one of the most beautiful weddings I've ever been to, and Austin is such a beautiful place. I'm amazed. I haven't ever been there before. So this was beautiful, and it was actually the weekend before all that flooding occurred. So we were really blessed that it was such a beautiful weekend because it was an outside wedding. So that's how I came upon this message I'm giving you today, because when I was meeting with her and her fiancé last September, and we were kind of putting the wedding together and doing the order of service, and I said to them, you know, in Christian weddings, you typically have a little bit of a message in the ceremony. And, you know, they said, well, what would you talk about? And I said, well, sometimes, you know, you do the Genesis first and second chapter about it's not good for man to be alone. And sometimes the Corinthians 13 chapter is done, the love is patient, love is kind. Sometimes that's used. Sometimes we use the Ephesians about, you know, husbands love your wives. And I said, sometimes we use the wedding in Cana. And so my niece said, oh, I want that one. And I'm telling you the truth, all of a sudden I thought to myself, why did I say the wedding in Cana? I have never done that before. And I've only read it a couple of times. Why did I say that? So, of course, I didn't tell her those thoughts. And I said to her, oh, sure, that sounds great. So that was last September, and the wedding was May 2nd, right? So I'm coming up to about 2 weeks before this wedding, and I thought, God, I have nothing. And I've prayed, and I've got nothing. And I sat down. It was now where I'm almost a week before the wedding, and I sat down, and I started reading the story again. And all of a sudden, it was amazing. It was like two things struck me, and it was like a flash of light. And as I read that, I thought, my goodness, the wedding in Cana, this is the first miracle Jesus ever performed for family. And so that's what struck me, first of all, was that, yes, we've heard that it's the first miracle Jesus performed, but I realized it was for a family member. It was in a family setting. And not only was it done for family, but it was done for a family member because of a family member. And Jesus initially said no, and then he relented. And I thought, wow, this is how God feels about family. This is how important family is to God, how moved he is by family. The second interaction was this idea as Jesus, as a man, you know, this is God in the flesh, as a mortal man, the interaction he had with a woman. And we're going to look at the interaction between Jesus and Mary, and there is far more to it than I ever realized. And it was the biggest, just huge awakening in my brain, in my spirit, I've really had in quite some time. So the gender implications were huge, amazing, curious, interesting, I mean, and kind of humorous. So we have these two things happening. We have a miracle happening for family. And then we can really learn about gender differences and how men and women interact and how Jesus as a mortal man interacted with a woman and how he presented the heart of God so well. So, you know, we have this situation of miracles, and I do want you to know that many academicians and biblical scholars certainly say we use the word miracle too much and we use it much too loosely. And probably they are true. That is true. When I research some of what miracles truly are. But I really want you to know that I believe that God is glorified when we give him credit for anything that is to us, this is quote unquote, miraculous to us. You know, what we know about true miracles is they must break or transcend a natural law. That's what makes, that's really what the definition of a miracle is. It has to transcend natural law. So something like the parting of the Red Seas or the lame walking, somebody being raised from the dead, the lengthening, you know, of a 24-hour day. So, you know, be that as it may, you have experienced, you know, or you want to experience a miracle, you know what it is to need a miracle and what a miracle is to you. So it may not transcend natural law, but it does transcend our ability to make something happen that we cannot make happen. And that always, to me, is a miracle. And so those miracles, this is how God shows me that he is working in my life. Even if it's something like getting necessary information that changes things around completely, and that becomes a miracle. It's having, you know, information or direction or guidance that you would not have otherwise had. So sometimes it's divine intervention that becomes a miraculous event in your life. And what we do know is that Jesus has the ability to break and transform the laws of nature to help, to heal, and inspire us, because we have the biblical accounts of the miracle, true miracles that he does. So many evangelicals, we believe that Jesus living in us gives us the ability to perform signs and wonders. You know, I don't know if it makes any difference where we're on that continuum as to how we actually define miracles. I just know that we need them, and I know that God is willing to do them. And if the miracle doesn't transcend natural law, but it certainly transcends my ability in my life, I believe it is a miracle. And we do have many people that report physical changes, you know, that doctors can't explain. You know, people miraculously healed of cancer. They went in, there's the x-ray that shows the MRI that shows they have it. The next time they don't. So we don't need to belabor what or not, what is or is not a miracle. But what we do need to know and what we do need to really camp on and believe is that God does do the miraculous. He wants to do the miraculous, and he loves family. So this show is to inspire and to teach, and so that we have encouragement to believe and ask for a miracle, as well as receiving some really good information that might produce miracles in regards to the opposite sex relationships you may have, and that's romantic or otherwise. It doesn't have to just be a romantic opposite sex relationship, because the one with Jesus and his mother Mary was certainly not romantic, and it was still the most poignant moment I've read in the Bible about men and women interacting together. So you're going to really enjoy this. So we have these two types of miracles. So at the wedding in Canaan, we see God, being a mortal man as Jesus, interacts with a mortal woman, Mary. And we see this poignant moment at the wedding in Cana as Jesus is acting as a mortal man in a family interaction. Wow. And what we will learn from this small interaction. So the wedding feast in Cana, if you're not familiar with this story, is a miracle story in the Christian New Testament. And in the story, Jesus and his disciples were invited to a wedding celebration in Cana in Galilee. So towards the end of the feast, when the wine was running out, Jesus commanded his servants to go fill jugs with water, which he then turned into wine. This, his first of seven miracles. And it's recounted in the Gospel according to John. So I'm going to read you, just for a moment, a little synopsis of this. And this is John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. This states that while Jesus was attending a marriage in Cana with his disciples, the party ran out of wine. Jesus' mother told Jesus, "They have no wine." And Jesus replied, "O woman, what has this to do with me? My hour is not yet come." His mother then said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Jesus ordered the servants to fill containers with water, to draw out some and take it to the chief steward waiter. After tasting it, without knowing where it came from, the steward remarked to the bridegroom that he had departed from the custom of serving the best wine first by serving it last. John adds that Jesus did this, the first of his signs in Cana of Galilee, and it revealed his glory to his disciples, and they believed in him. So, as mentioned earlier, these two things struck me. The first miracle Jesus did was for family. And it was not only done for family, but it was done at the request of a family member for a family member, and Jesus originally said no, and then he relented. And we also see at the very end, which we're going to really want to focus on, is at the very end of this, Jesus did this, his glory was revealed, and his disciples believed in him. So we, because we are not in the presence of Jesus naturally, are believing through faith. And it's imperative that we really remind ourselves that our belief has to do with the faith that we have in who Jesus says he is, the recounts of who he is, what we have experienced, what we have seen, and what others have seen and experienced. So the second interaction, like I said, was this between Jesus and a woman. And the gender implications were huge. So I want you to hear a couple of different translations, because this always helps me when I look at several translations, particularly this one, because I wanted to make sure of what I thought my original insight was. Because it's a way to hear the tone and the implicit emotions and the tenor of this particularly special and very telling moment in time. So this is the Voice translation. And this says, starting in chapter 2, John, the second chapter, 3 days later, they all went to celebrate a wedding feast in Cana of Galilee. Mary, the mother of Jesus, was invited together with him and his disciples. So this is important that you kind of think about this. They were not the primary people at this wedding. That's important. Remember that fact. Mary was not the one giving the wedding. She's invited to the wedding, as was Jesus and his disciples. So while they were celebrating, the wine ran out. Jesus' mother hurried to her son. Another important little notation to make. Mary. This is what Mary says. "The host stands on the brink of embarrassment. There are many guests, and there is no more wine." Jesus says, "Dear woman, is it our problem they miscalculated when buying wine and inviting guests? Excuse me. My time has not arrived." But she turned to the servants, and Mary says, "Do whatever my son tells you." In that area were six massive stone water pots that could each hold 20 to 30 gallons. They were typically used for Jewish purification rites, and Jesus' instructions were clear. He said, "Fill each water pot with water until it's ready to spill over the top. Then fill a cup, deliver it to the bridegroom in amazement." The head waiter said, "This wine is delectable. Why would you save the most exquisite fruit of the vine? A host would generally serve the good wine first, and when his inebriated guests don't notice or care, he would serve the inferior wine. You have held back the best for last." Jesus performed this miracle, the first of his signs. They did not know how this happened, but when the disciples and the servants witnessed this miracle, their faith blossomed. So, important points here. 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus says to him, the host on the brink of embarrassment, there's many guests and there's no more wine. And Jesus says, "Dear woman." Now this is a term of endearment. He says, "Is it our problem they miscalculated when buying wine and inviting guests? My time has not arrived." She turned to the servants and said, "Do whatever my son tells you." So let's look at the Message version. This says in chapter 2, verse 2, 3 days later, there was a wedding in the village of Cana, and Jesus' mother was there. Jesus and his disciples were guests also. When they started running low on wine at the wedding, Jesus' mother said, "They're just about out of wine." Jesus said, "Is that any of our business, mother, yours or mine? This isn't my time. Don't push me." She went ahead anyway, telling the servants, "Whatever he tells you, do it." And it goes on to say the same thing. They filled the six cisterns. The host was amazed. Everybody believed. So let's look at the Living Bible. I like this. This says that Jesus and his mother and the disciples were guests, and when the wine supply ran out during the festivities and Jesus' mother came to him with a problem, remember that, came to him with a problem, this is Jesus said, I can't help you now. It isn't yet my time for miracles. But his mother told the servants, do whatever he tells you to do. Again, we have the six stone water pots were filled. Everybody was amazed. And there was the miracle. So let's look at the good news. I like this little way they talk about the interaction between Mary and Jesus. When the wine had given out, Jesus' mother said to him, they are out of wine. You must not tell me what to do, Jesus replied. My time has not yet come. Jesus' mother then told the servants, do whatever he tells you. And it goes on to say the same thing. Listen to the New International Version. This is fascinating. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. Woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. And it goes on to say the same. Let's look at one last one. This is the New King James Version. And this says, and when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. Jesus said to her, woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. His mother said to the servants, whatever he says to you, do it. This beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. So this is amazing. So we see in this reading that the first miracle God performed on earth as Jesus was a family situation. It was in a family. It was for family. God loves family. We are his family. So we really want to understand that every day God is wanting to do miracles in our lives. And what we also know is that when it comes to our lives, we are going to need miracles in the future as well. It isn't just one that we need. We don't just need the miracle of conversion. In order to get through our lives and do the calling that God has on our lives, we are going to need God's intervention on an ongoing basis. So what we see here in this story in Cana is that Mary knew she had a need, and to her, it was significant. Now, this is where I want you to really hear this. This is what was so powerful to me when I read this. This was significant to Mary. Now, remember I said earlier when we were reading those passages, Mary was an invited guest. This was not the wedding she was putting on. She was invited, just as Jesus was. They were invited. They were family, but they were invited. So this is really, really important. Because what we're seeing here is that Jesus says to her, what concern is this of mine? And that's the second thing that struck me. First was that Jesus did a miracle for the first time with family, and it was not his time, and he relented. The second was his conversation with Mary, when he says, what concern is this of mine? Because maybe it wasn't a concern of his. Maybe he was looking at the bigger picture, and the need for wine wasn't significant in the bigger picture. But maybe it just wasn't significant to Jesus. He and his friends were there, and they were just invited to the wedding, and so they didn't feel like it was a problem for them. But it was very important, very significant to Mary. And so she went to the one person who could make it happen. That is what I want you to walk away with. This was important to Mary. She went to who could make it happen. So I want to encourage all of us to go to the one person that can make what we think is significant, significant. Go to the person that has the ability to make happen what we need to happen. We're his family, and he loves us. So let's look a little deeper at this. The statement, this is no concern of mine, but it was a concern to Mary. It mattered to her. What did Jesus do? He made it his concern. This is so powerful because how many of you men think about all the things that women come and worry about, lament about, stress about, that you think to yourself, what difference does it make to us? Doesn't matter to us. Doesn't have anything to do with me. It's not my problem. And women, we have a hard time. Everything feels like our problem. We look across the street and we see our neighbors in distress and we think we have to go help. Our husbands or our boyfriends or fathers or brothers look at us and say, what does it have to do with me? Why do I don't want to get involved in that? So we see how powerful this interaction was with Mary and Jesus. Jesus was being a mortal man. And he was simply saying, what concern is this of mine? This doesn't have anything to do with me. And besides the fact, it's not my time. So don't push me on this. But what did Jesus do? Just showing the heart of God. He made it his concern. He didn't talk her out of the need. He didn't belittle the need. He didn't do it begrudgingly. What he did do was he gave her more wine than she needed, and he created wine that was of the highest quality. This is Jesus role modeling for men. It is a lesson for men. There are many things that are no concern to men, but are of great concern to the women in your life. Jesus is considered the groom. We are his bride. If it concerns his bride, it concerns him. So when we look at this, we see that Jesus helped Mary. He entered into her life. He made her life important to him. He helped her in what she was trying to achieve. Men, you're the leaders, the protectors, the providers, the covering. You help the women in your life. Because there are many things that concern us that don't seem significant to you. But this is the beauty of the heart of God. If it concerns me, if I care about it, he cares about it. Now, this is wonderful because many times we as women, we can learn that sometimes we don't need to worry and men are good at helping us to let it go. But we see in this moment that not only was Jesus saying, it's not my time, but whatever it was that went on inside of him that caused him to relent and to go ahead and do the miracle, that's the heart of God, that we need to trust the heart of God and go to God and not decide for God whether or not he's going to do it for us. But simply say to God, this is my need, this is my concern, this matters to me. I really need help with this. And trust that God will make it his concern. So in the same way, we have this great lesson for us as women dealing with men. What did Mary do correctly? First of all, she went to him. So we need to go to the men in our lives and not expect them to always know what concerns us or what's important to us or to even understand why it's important to us. You see in all those passages, Mary didn't talk a lot. She simply said, they are running out of wine, or we need more wine. This was of great distress to her. She knew how embarrassing it would be for the bridegroom of this bride. She knew they were starting their lives out together. She knew this was a public issue. She knew somebody really messed up and she wanted to cover it. She wanted it to be a beautiful event. So let's look at the second part. When Mary said to Jesus, they're running out of wine, and he turned to her and said, what concern is this of mine? My time has not yet come. Mary did not get offended. She simply stated her concern, and then she said to the head servant, do whatever Jesus tells you to do. So she trusted who Jesus was, and he did not let her down. And many times we as women, we ask for help, and then we help the men in our lives help us. You don't see Jesus going and pointing out exactly what cisterns, how to do it, what the order is to do it in, and helping him do it. She simply said to the head servant, do whatever my son tells you to do. So how many times do we ask for God's help and then help him and tell him how to do it? Because Mary trusted Jesus, and Jesus did not let her down. Not only did he do it, but he did it better than anybody ever expected, and he did it graciously and extravagantly. This is what we can believe about our God. So what else did Mary? She didn't just come to Jesus and say, hey, they ran out of beverages. Because how many times do we go to men and they need something specific, they can't read our minds, and we get offended because they don't know? Like, how come I have to explain all this to you? So she said specifically, they are running out of wine. We need more wine. So this is remarkable that he heard the request and he did it, and she did not complicate it. So on a broader scope, when we combine both these issues, the lesson for us today as well as the admonition for us, is that we are to be encouraged. I can't say it strongly enough. To please go to the one person that will make what you think, what I think, what we think is significant. He will make it significant to him. Go to the one person that has the ability to make what we need to happen, happen. Ask for the miracle and trust he knows what you really need. That we are his family and he loves his family. So when we are then secondly interacting with the opposite sex, we need to respect gender differences. And this is one simple example of how we deal with men. Because we can easily disrespect men when we go whine to them, complain to them, give them too many details, help them do it. Because what you'll find with men, and I have found this repeatedly, if I go to try to help them, I start helping them, and they finally look at me and say, well, why don't you do it yourself? And it can hurt my feelings when I didn't understand men. But now that I understand men, a lot of the times just helping them is letting them do it their way, believing they're going to do it, having faith in them, encouraging them, letting them be successful with you, letting them be a hero. And if I need to give some details as to how I specifically would like it to be done, then I say to them, I would like to tell you the two or three or four things about this project that are very important to me, and that's what I would appreciate. All the rest of it, whatever you want to do, I'm sure you're going to do a great job. These four things are imperative for me. And I give them a goal to shoot for. I give them a mark to actually make it happen. And then I say to them, if you would like some help, I'm more than willing to help you. What can I do for you? And if they say, well, go get me these tools, bring me a glass of water, whatever it is. But men like to do things on their own. They like to prove to themselves what they're capable of doing. So it's imperative that we don't think that men and women work together the same way. Women collaborate, men do not. If you ever watch baseball, if the pitcher is doing terrible at his game, the catcher, the first baseman, the left fielder don't come to the mound and say, hey, why don't you let me pitch for a while, and you out to the left field and hang out there for a while. No. What happens is every member on that team just plays harder. They only do their part harder. This is how men deal with things. Women, on the other hand, we collaborate and change positions all the time. We're constantly saying, oh, let me do that. You go do this. I'll take over for you here. And so we need to really respect the way that men work. And men, it's very important to you to realize that when women have concerns, this is one of the reasons the world is still working, because women are concerned globally. And we are constantly watching and seeing what's going on in our environment. And we carry burdens and concerns and cares about things. We want people to get along, to work out, for families to be okay, for people to be okay. And so our tendency is many times to care about all the things that are happening around us and have a hard time letting them go. So it's important to the women in your life, daughters, girlfriends, sisters, mothers, grandmothers, coworkers, that if it's a concern to them, it needs to be a concern to you if you're in relationship with them. But that's one of the most loving things that you can do to them, is not belittle it, make fun of it, be sarcastic about it, tell them to get over it, that you simply say, you know, okay, if that really bothers you, let me see what I can do for you. If you really think it's something you want to help them let go of, part of your relationship issue is creating trust with them so that they can trust you when you say, I think we can stay out of this one. I think it's okay if we don't address this. So I'm so glad you joined me today. So I want to remind you more than anything, you go to who can do a miracle. You ask Jesus for the miracle. You trust that he cares for you, that you are important to him, that you are his family, and that you trust that he knows how to do it, and he will do it. So I'm so glad you joined me today. I just pray blessings for you in this week. And remember, he cares for you, and he carries your burdens. Have a blessed week.